church family. Father, I don't know what our weeks have been like. I don't know how busy or how easy or how relaxing or how stressful they've been. But Father, what I pray is that during this time, we kind of put those things aside and we just enjoy being together, being with you. That, yes, there are cares of this world. There are things we have to get to. But I don't want that to distract us. I want us to be focused on your word. I want us to be focused on what you would have for us today. So, Father, I just pray, do a work amongst us that we would be focused, that we would enjoy this time, enjoy this fellowship, enjoy the teaching of your word. And as we worship together in the next service, may we just use this time to honor and glorify you. So, Father, please speak to us, work in and through me, and that may we glorify you and say at the end of this day, God has been with us and he has blessed us. It's in your name I pray. Amen. All right, so continuing 1 Peter. First of all, I just kind of changed it up a little bit this week. Someone tell me something interesting you did this week. Just tell me something interesting, something cool, something fun. Yes.
The baby shower, the diaper party went awesome yesterday.
Yeah.
Taylor had no clue.
Awesome. And I saw it was a very basketball themed thing. I'm very offended I wasn't there, but you know, whatever. That's cool. Oh, Josiah could be there. Okay, that's cool. Laura moved to her new apartment. Excellent.
Everything's working out, thank God.
Good. Mm-hmm. Someone else, something exciting, something good that happened. Guys, come on, Thursday. Let's go.
Yesterday, my grandson and my son-in-law both got a deer.
That is great. I am so happy for them. Do you know what size?
No. I know. I didn't get the details.
You didn't get any details? It's kind of like a baby, all right? When girls have babies, you learn the height, weight, time. When you guys get a deer, or people get a deer, same thing. Height, weight, size, smell, time of the moon crescent and all that. You got to know these things. No? Do they have ears? Do they have black spots and white coloring? Because that's a cow. Yes. Good. Someone else. Someone exciting. Guys, Thursday. Anyone? All right. Yeah, Ryan. Oh, we had a lot of meat. What was the best meat we had? Yeah. Ryan and I were sitting across each other and basically challenging who would turn our card first. You had this card. If it was green, they keep bringing you meat. When it was red, you said stop. And we're just like, no, bring it. And then once to the point where it's basically pouring out of our mouths and out of our throat, like, okay, we should probably turn it. So, and then we got cake afterwards. So it was great. Good. All right, someone else, something exciting, good to happen. Unless you want to share something terrible that happened. I don't know. I really don't want to hear about terrible stuff. I want to hear good news. Anyone? Yes. Amen. Oh. That was a good meeting. Yes?
In the RU last night, me and Christy went and helped Joanna, and we had a bunch of little kids. So I think the little, you know, the Friday with the RU with the little kids, hopefully more kids are coming.
Excellent. Sweet. All right, good. That makes me feel better. Let's go into 1 Peter. 1 Peter, activating your salvation. We're actually finishing up a section of 1 Peter, and we're going to be entering the final section of Peter next week. So we may be somewhere between 3 to 5 more lessons on 1 Peter, or it could be, you know, another 12. So, no, it's not going to be another 12. Fundamental thoughts. We hopefully know these by now. We're different from the world. We're called to live in holiness. And the thought we're on now, my honest living, could lead to persecution, but may lead to other salvation. We're concluding that thought today, and we talked about the four ways that how do we live in society with government. We obey God, but we also obey our government. And just no matter what, we make sure we obey God. In our work, we work, even though our situation may not be the best, but our attitude could lead to salvation, like Christ's suffering on the cross. You know, that wasn't a pleasant thing, but he went through that. He bore that because it led to salvation. How to live in marriage, that the wives are to adorn themselves with holy submission, and the husbands are to cherish and value their wives because of that. And then our final one that we're on today, honest living as the church. I know I changed it from last week in the church, because I want the idea to be this. What we're discussing is, how do we live as a church, together, united, in the midst of this world? You know, because our world isn't just secluded to here. We go out to, we were just talking about, where do we go grocery shopping? We go to Market Basket. We go to Hannaford's. We go to Walmart. We go to the dollar store for our groceries and such. You know, we go to work. We're out with people. How do we live as a church, collective? And so what we're discussing, really, it entitles all of us, but not just on an individual basis, but to do this together. And as you'll see in a moment. So the key verse for this section, I hope you kind of have this memorized maybe a little bit. I know I don't have it memorized, but I'm familiar with the idea. But this is the foundational verse for this whole subject, 1 Peter 2:11 through 12. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. All right, we did this last time. Someone tell me, what does this verse mean? What's kind of the big idea? Sum it up.
Holy living.
Holy living. We have to live a holy life. Why? Boom, because we have examples. We are called to holiness. And who's our prime example of holiness? Oh, good job. Yes, God, be ye holy, for I am holy. We are different from the world. We live for holiness, and it needs to be seen in our everyday lives. It starts on the inside, and as holiness grows on the inside, it pours out. All right? So let's get into our text today. We're going to start 1 Peter chapter 3, starting at verse 8. Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrariwise, blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil, and his lips that they speak no guile. Let him eschew evil and do good. Let him seek peace and ensue it. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. What is the goal of our honest living as a church? What is our goal? And it's that first phrase where we start in verse 8, finally, be ye all of one mind. Let us be thinking the same way. Let us have the same mindset. Let us have the same goal. Let us pursue life the same way. Let us be what I call unity. Let us be united. And notice what he is saying here. He is talking about how we as Christians are different from the world. We're different in the way we react to government. We're different in our work ethic. We're different in our marriages. And in our everyday living, we should be different. How? United. I want you to take 30 seconds and talk with your neighbor about how does this show difference between us and the world? Unity. On your mark, get set, go. Ten seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Time. All right, someone tell me. Why? Yes, ma'am.
Because we live for God, and he's our world, and we're supposed to do the right things, and just believe in everyday life.
Okay, good.
And
Yep. Someone else. What makes unity different? What makes us living in unity different from the world? Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. We have the word of truth, and so we, yesterday we had a wonderful devotional by Tyler, talking the difference between obedience and submission. I thought that was excellent. Obedience is the outward effect, but submission is the attitude.
Nice. Okay.
Good. And it manifests itself by many things. We were talking about, you know, bearing one of those burdens, helping the household of faith. So.
Good.
The world is always in turmoil and strife.
Yeah. I think I can't remember the exact numbers, but I think in the last 242 years or so, it's like 230, 240 years, America has had, what, 2 years without war somewhere? And then you take the whole world as a whole. When has the whole world ever known peace? Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
Ever since then, turmoil. People, I mean, Cain and Abel. That wasn't unity. I mean, unless it's a rock united with someone's head. There was no unity there. There's always been turmoil. There's always been division. And this is why, if you turn to John 17 and verse 20, this is what's been called Christ's high priestly prayer. This is Christ praying for his disciples, and for those who will believe on him. This is on their way to the Garden of Gethsemane. And so you get to John 17, look at verse 20. This is Christ praying. He says, "Neither pray I for these alone," referring to his disciples there, the 11, "but for them also which shall believe on me through their word." Who's that? Everyone take your finger and point to yourself. Okay, us. He's praying for us. And what does he say? That they may all be one, as thou, Father, art in me and I in thee, that they also may be in us, that the world may believe that thou hast sent me. What is really one of our prime ways of showing to the world God is real, God is true? The unity of the church. Have you ever noticed the divisions of churches? How prominent that is? How when a church splits, that's what people like to blow up and make problems. Why? Because if Satan can get a hold of that and say, "Well, look, here is God's church, and he's supposed to have the answer, but these people can't live in peace," is there really a God? You see how unity in our church is so, so, so important. Look also at Philippians chapter 2. Yes, sir. All right, you tell me. What's the difference between an assembly and a gathering?
We can have a gathering, yeah, but it's the assembly what the word says, doesn't it?
Yep.
So let's think about something a minute. If I took my watch, took it all apart, took all the pieces and just scooped it together, what do I have?
A mess.
True. A gathering.
A gathering. A mess,
but
a gathering.
If I put everything back into that watch,
it's assembled. And they have to work together, piece by piece.
And everything works together.
Don't get ahead of me,
we
man.
We don't have splits. You know, you said no splits.
Yep.
It's a bad thing. I've been involved in that stuff.
No.
It's not good.
That's right. Philippians chapter 2, verse 1. If there be therefore any consolation in Christ, which there is, if any comfort of love, which there is, any fellowship of the Spirit, if any bowels of mercy, fulfill ye my joy, that ye be like-minded. Same idea, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. You see how this is should be the common theme of the church, that we as a church, as we are living in this world, the key characteristic of us is, yes, we're striving for holiness, but what should the world see in us is our unity, that we are united for the same cause, and that is the cause of Christ. I like what Warren Wiersbe said, unity does not mean conformity. That's socialism. It means cooperation in the midst of diversity. Saying this, that just because you're united doesn't mean we all agree. All right, let's go to, again, a basketball analogy. The game my team is down 97 to 90. What's after 98? There we go. 97 to 98. All right, so we can tell this is fictional because my team has never scored 97 points. But we, all right, last play. There's 2 seconds on the clock. We got to come up with a play. 5 players on the court. How many players can shoot the ball at one time? One. So Billy over here is like, I really want to shoot the ball. I really want to shoot the ball. Billy, you can't shoot the ball. Billy, you're not going to shoot the ball. Billy, you can set a screen to open up Tommy so that he can come across the screen and get the ball. And if we're not, even though we have different ideas, different views on how the thing should be done, if we can't agree on the same method, it's okay to have different ideas on things. But unity comes in when we agree to put those aside and say, you want the cause is better. And for the basketballs, we want to win the game, so we got to get Tommy the ball so he can shoot the ball and score. That's the idea of unity. Some people think that we have to believe exactly the same thing at every single turn. No. There's core doctrines, absolutely. I can't take a bunch of hockey players and put them on the basketball court and say, all right, put your skates on and your hockey sticks and just go whack everyone on the court. That would be fun, but that's not how you're going to play the game, right? And so you have to put those differences aside so that you can work together. I heard that a lot. So how do we have unity? What does it take to do that? Verse 8. Let's read. Oh, you got to go back to 1 Peter. 1 Peter 3, verse 8. Be all of one mind, having compassion one for another. Love as brethren. Be pitiful. Be courteous. What does this look like? Being compassionate one for another. Have the same cares. You know, care for each other's burdens. Care for each other's needs. Be aware of them. You know, different people value different things. And for some people, this is going to be a little bit more weighty for them. And for us, we're like, what's the big deal? But being compassionate, you're sharing the same emotion. You're sharing the same feelings and the idea. And not that we got to be like a Hallmark movie. That's not what I'm saying. But the idea is that we're aware of other people's needs and other people's burdens. Okay? We need to be compassionate one to another and to the world also. Because aren't there needs in our own church? Aren't there needs in the world around us? Do we care? Do we have that burden? Or are we so fixed on what I get out of the church? What can the world give me? We see that? See that difference? Love as brothers. Be of the same family. Folks, if you're here today and you're saved, guess what? We're stuck with each other for eternity. All right? Because we're the family of God. All right? I'm going to be up in heaven, probably still talking about basketball. Probably still being jealous about everyone else getting a deer, and I never even got one. You know? Nah, that's probably not going to happen. I'm going to talk about deer up in heaven, though. But we're family. We're going to be stuck with each other. We're going to be with each other. We're going to live with each other. We're going to fellowship. We're going to worship God with each other. And the problem that we see in the church is that we fight like brothers when we should love like brothers. You know, we take our relationship more like Cain and Abel. We try to destroy each other because we get jealous of what God's doing in their lives. When we should be more like David and Jonathan, where we care for another. We want each other. We want the best for each other. We're supposed to love as brothers, be in the same family. John 13, 34, 35 talks about when Jesus is speaking to his disciples at the Last Supper, and it's saying that you need to love another. I give you a new commandment. Love one another. It's the very basic fundamental of what we're supposed to do.
Paul drives that home too in his epistles.
Yeah. 1 Corinthians 12 talks about how you are gifted with spiritual gifts. 1 Corinthians 14 talks to you about how to use your spiritual gifts. Does anyone know what 1 Corinthians 13 is about? Love. And it's not about husband and wife. It's not about, you know, Republicans and Democrats. It's about the church. How are we supposed to show love in the church? If you don't have love in the church, how are you going to have unity? Have pity. Have the same emotions. Similar to compassion. But look at 1 Corinthians 12. Speaking of 1 Corinthians. First Corinthians 12, and looking at verse 25 and 26. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 25 says that there should be no schism in the body. Someone tell me, what's a schism? I won't go too far.
No, what's good.
Okay.
Getting into the meat. I like it.
What's schism?
Division.
Division. Excellent. Just look at the great schism. Schism of that 1 year. It was really cool. That there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care one for another. And whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it. Or if one member be honored, all members rejoice with it. You see that unity, that same mindset, that same pity? Now, I'm going to be perfectly honest. I have a hard time trying to explain pity and compassion. I'm going to sound like a really terrible person. You know, because us guys, we're like, yeah, get over it. You know, you see guys with their kids on the swing, they jump up 30 feet up in the air and they land flat on their face. Like, yeah, rub some dirt on it. You'll be fine. Right? And I'm kind of more of that mindset. It's like, you know, pain, it's good for you. It teaches you lessons. But then, you know, you have that mom that comes, oh, boy, it annoys me. But what we're seeing here is actually what God does towards us. What did Jesus say when he was coming into Jerusalem, riding on the donkey, and he saw Jerusalem and he cried, and what did he say? I would have what? Yeah, treated like a mother hen. I've never seen a picture of a mother hen going, chirp, 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 or whatever they do, and gather in all the little chickies and cover them with their wings to protect them. Right? Christ had pity on his people. When Christ was tired and he got off the boat, they sailed across the lake, and then he got off the boat and he saw all the people. He said he was moved with compassion. I know us guys could probably struggle with that. I was like, oh, I just want to be left alone. Maybe other people could be, well, that's not just guys. Other people want that too. But we need to be aware of other people and of their needs and of their emotions and how we can help with that. This is the problem I run into. People just want, like, my mom will call me up. She's probably going to hate me for saying this. My mom will call me up and say, now, Nate, I need Nate, my son, not Pastor Nate. So I need you to put your son hat on. It's like, there ain't no pastor hat. This is just what it is, all right? It's like, but I will try. Because she just wants me to listen, because I'm just like, well, let's fix it. This is the problem. Let's go beat up that guy. We'll go hide his body here, and we're done. And that's not really what she wants to do. But she just wants someone to listen, to be aware, to be watching, to know, and to show compassion. We're supposed to do that as a church, of the needs of the people in our church, of the needs of the people around us. And then also back in 1 Peter, that last word, being courteous. A modern translation of that word would be humbly minded, being submissive, which is giving everyone the same value. In Galatians 5, it says that, you know what, it's not about being a woman, a man, a slave, or free, a Greek, or a Gentile, because we are all one in Christ. It doesn't matter what your standing is, what your position is, what you do for your job, what you don't do for your job, what your health is, what your health is not. It doesn't matter. We are all on the same level because of Christ. How can we not be united? How can we think that we are better and others are worse than us? And that's where division comes in our church. Because you'll get someone who says, well, I think I have a better way. And someone disagrees with them. And then, you know, they start bickering about it. And then they start gossiping about it. And then just division. Because we're not humbly minded.
Question.
Yeah.
That's just like, I observed a business meeting here back last week. They would talk about you. They would talk about you. Listen, you've got to keep your focus on Christ, okay? Because
yeah.
You can get such a turmoil.
Right.
Arguing about something. What did you say?
Well, yeah, and the idea is that, again, it goes back to unity. That, you know what, it's okay to have a different idea. It's okay to have a different mindset on a situation. But it's when someone says something different and we move forward with that, that's like, okay. It's like, there still isn't a gym back in the field up there. I've been trying for like 5 years. And it's okay. Well, yeah, I sleep mostly well at night because of that.
With the church over.
No, exactly.
Hey, you ain't doing what I want you to do.
But look at Galatians chapter 6. Being humbly minded, we're giving the same value to every person in spite of, it doesn't matter who they are. But Galatians chapter 6, verse 2, it kind of encompasses this whole idea we're talking about. Galatians 6, 2, bear ye one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. I want to see if this is on my next slide. It is. All right, we'll get there in a second. And so as we look at this list that's given to us in 1 Peter chapter 3, 8 and 9, he's saying the goal of the church is to be united working together, and this is how you're going to do it. Now, I want you to think about this way. Think of a situation you're in, whether with your family, at work, your church, your bingo club, whatever you do. But take your group, and if your group was characterized as being compassionate, loving as family, pitiful on each other, and humbly minded, what do you think that group would be like? You tell me. What do you think would happen in those groups? Let's take family, for example. Let's say your whole family was compassionate, loving as family, having pity on one another, and humbly minded. What do you think your family would be like? You tell me.
Cohesive.
Together. Like, well, that's what they said.
This is love, cohesive.
Right.
Follow that.
Right. And it's kind of like these are the pieces that glues us together and puts us together so that we are united as one. Assembly. Back to Chuck's watch. The idea of being put together. And if this is going to be our church, this is what we need to have. And one of the dangers that we could fall into with this mindset is like, yeah, that person needs to be compassionate to me. No, that's not the idea of this. That's the wrong idea. That's not being humbly minded. The idea is I need to be compassionate to you. And I need to be compassionate and loving you as a brother. And I need to be pitiful of you and humbly towards you. And if everyone had that mindset, we would actually have true unity. And so really the one wrench that you throw into the machine that would destroy this is pride. This is where pride is so dangerous. Because pride could turn to bitterness, could turn to tearing each other down, could turn to just keep filling in the blank. This is why we have to be aware and make sure that we are aware if there's pride in our life and watching for that. Verse 9, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrarywise, blessing, knowing that we are there to call that ye should inherit a blessing. This is going on the idea of how to be united, and you guys know this. You work in nursery, you work in a daycare, you work at an elementary school or high school or even college. I've seen this in college too, where someone does something to you. And it's like, well, I got to do it back to them. What good does that do? Is that justice? No, it's not justice. Because you know what normally happens? I saw this in a soccer game. Oh, this was, I can't believe this happened. Then I can't believe. I was the referee, and the other guy was the umpire, so he had higher priority over me. And this game is getting pretty intense. It's a playoff game. And this one, there's these two guys that just keep going at it. It's like, all right, good, we got a good game. Because they're competing. But then all of a sudden, this one guy gets tripped up. He misses the ball. He gets, and the ball goes the other way. So as he runs back, he runs and he shoulder pumps the guy to the ground. It's like, okay, I'm about to blow my whistle and call a red card. Because you can't do that in soccer. But then, the next guy who falls down, like, whoa, he was on the ground. The guy run past him, he grabs his foot and flips him. And the guy falls on the ground. So, like, I only got a red card, one red card, I need two red cards for each of these guys. So we're running up to these guys, and we're trying to stop the fight, and the other ref didn't see it. And so I said, these guys need red cards. This is what happens. I said, no, I'm just going to give them a warning. What? Anyway, that's not part of it. But the idea of what happened. Well, he tripped me, so I'm going to push him. Well, he pushed me, so I'm going to flip him. And then it was, well, I'm going to beat each other. We're going to beat each other's faces. You see how just always escalate, where the crime and the punishment are never on the same level. You see this with kids all the time. They said something about me. They said my nose was big. So I threw a rock at him. What'd he do? Well, he grabbed a stick and he hit me with it. Well, then what did you do? I grabbed the keys to the car and I drove him over. Well, then what'd he do? He dropped an atomic bomb on. It just keeps building and building and building and building. Right? This is the world's way of dealing with things. I mean, on a more serious level, take World War II. How did that finish? Keep going to war, we try to get some peace, doesn't happen. It's like, all right, we're gonna invade, okay, no, okay. We're going to do this, no, okay. We're going to drop a bomb on you. Not enough, let's drop a second atomic bomb on you. That's the world's way of dealing with conflict. Don't speak evil words because of evil words. Well, they said this to me, so I said, you know, let's go back to the nose. They said my nose is ugly. Well, your hair is out of place. Well, your shoes don't match your outfit. Gasp. And just keep building and building and building. How are you going to have peace? How are we going to have unity if this is in our own church? This is what we need to be aware of. Yes, sir.
What's the most unruly atom of our body?
James chapter 3. We're getting there.
Oh, I went in. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You do. Well, that's why we're buds. Turn to Matthew chapter 5. Where do you think Peter got this? Because you remember Peter? Who is the guy in the garden who lopped off the ear of a dude? Peter. Who is the one who told, Lord, Lord, no, you're not going to go to Jerusalem and die. That's not what's going to happen. Peter. Peter's the guy that's always being very brash and bold and doing things that shouldn't be done.
Well, let's stop and think about Peter for a minute. Time out.
Can we come back to Peter in a little bit? Because I'm about to get to Jesus.
You're surfacing on something, but you need to get into it a little bit. Peter, why was he so brash?
Fisherman.
And where did he come from?
Galilee.
He had a bad temper, but he had to learn how to...
And also, either really good aim or really bad aim. Huh? Just he either had really good aim or really bad aim. Because to cut off an ear, that's pretty impressive. Matthew chapter 5. Where did Peter get this? Looking at verse 10. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you, and ye shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. Now go to verse 38. Verse 38 says, ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn them also the other. And if a man shall sue thee at law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. Verse 43, and ye have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thy enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. And pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of the Heavenly Father. You know, go back to 1 Peter. You know what Peter is about to build up to? So the first section, Peter is all about, we have an awesome salvation. This third section, because of the salvation, we live differently. The third section, you are going to be persecuted.
Yes.
He's building the case that when people do evil towards you and wickedness towards you, and he's not talking about commenting on your fashion design or commenting on your appearances. They're talking about your lifestyle and everything you do, and the persecution is going to cost you your life. He says, when that happens, bless them. Don't retaliate. Show them Christ, which Christ did on the cross. That's the end of chapter 2, where he tells his servants, be willing to suffer for the sake of their salvation, just as Christ did, who bore the cross, who when spoken against, he didn't speak against. When beaten, he didn't give it back. Remember what Jesus told Peter after Peter lopped off that ear? He said, don't you believe that the Lord can send 10,000 legions of angels? I could wipe this world out like that. But there's a cause. There's a cause for us of why we should do this. Turn to Acts chapter 4. Acts chapter 4, verse 23. Oops, one more page. And being let go, they went to their own company and reported all that the chief priests and elders had said unto them. And when they heard that, they lifted up their voice to God with one accord, unity, and said, Lord, thou art God that has made the heaven, the earth, and the sea, and all that is in them, who by the mouth of thy servant David has said, why did the heathen rage and the people imagine vain things? The king of the earth stood upon the rulers, were gathered together against the Lord and against his Christ. For a truth against thy holy child Jesus, whom thou hast anointed before Herod and Pontius Pilate with the Gentiles, and the people of Israel were gathered together, for to do whatsoever thy hand and thy counsel determined to be done. And now, Lord, behold their threatenings. This is after these apostles were captured, were beaten in prison and told not to preach Christ. They gather together, they pray together, and they say, all right, let's get our guns. We're going to go get them. They prayed. Now, Lord, behold their threatenings, and grant unto thy servants that with all boldness they may speak thy word. Kind of saying this, it doesn't matter what they do. It doesn't matter what they say. We are going to go before our God and say, God, you see this. You are aware of this. This is in your hand. And so help us to do the job that we are here to do, which is not to retaliate. Why should I live this way? It's my calling. And God blesses this way of living. If you go back to 1 Peter, and you can compare that with Matthew 5:12, that says that if you do this, you will be blessed for this. What does that mean? I don't know. I don't really understand exactly what that blessing is. Is that something in heaven? Is it something here on earth? I think it could be both. But he says, if you live this way, the end of verse 9, that knowing that you are thereunto called, this is our calling. Why would I do this? Because honestly, it's kind of like you enter to a boxing match and you just tie your hands behind your back. Like, all right, have at it. No one wants to do that. Why would I be willing to go through this? Why would I be willing to be hurt? Why would I be willing to be spoken bad against? Because of Christ. This is what I'm called to. And folks, I'm not saying this is easy. This is not easy. But this is why we have to be united and praying together for boldness, that no matter how hard it gets, and I do believe we're going to come to some hard days soon. What does soon mean? 10, 15, 20 years? A couple months? I don't know. But we need to get together and pray together for boldness and unity, because if we allow a load of persecution to disperse us and destroy us,
it's happening little by little.
It is happening little by little. And then we move on to, oh my goodness, 5 minutes. Why should I live this way? And the next follow-up verses in 10 and 12, Peter actually quotes Psalm 34. Let me ask you a question by raising of hand. Do you want to love your life? Go ahead, raise your hand. Who wants to love life? Okay, there's some people who don't want to love life. Okay, that's okay. I understand. You might not understand the question. Who wants to have a good day? Does anyone want to have a good day? Okay, good. Okay, still some people who don't want to have a good day. We just love living in misery. That's great. Read Psalm 34. That's what Psalm 34 is about. How to have a good day. How to enjoy life. How to have a life that you would enjoy. Now, I'm promising you this. This is not a Joel Osteen message, okay? Your best life now. I'm not doing that. This is scripture. And he's going to address two parts in your life that we need to make sure they're in check. And I guarantee you, there's no other book in the bookstore that's going to tell you how to have a good life, how to have a good day this way. Only scripture does this. For he that will love life and see good days, this isn't a bad thing, okay? This is a good thing to desire. It's okay to enjoy life. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile. Let him eschew evil. Everyone say eschew. You got to make ew kind of mean. Eschew. And do good. Let him seek peace and ensue it. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. What's he saying here? Your words affect your day in life. Not others, yours. Actively restrain your tongue from evil. The idea is that you're trying to tie it up and you're kind of like, no! It's James chapter 3. Who can control the tongue? It's as a ship that controls the rudder, the stuff in the horse's mouth that turns it. No, that's why he's saying you need to actively restrain it. Because some people say, oh, well, you know, it's just my personality. It just flies out. That's sin. That's wrong. That's what needs to change. Yes, you can't control your tongue. That's why you need God to help you and change you. And the excuse, well, that's just my personality. Oh, that's just my Irish blood. Well, that's your sin blood. It needs to be changed. Restrain your lips from deceit, from lying. Some people are just natural liars like that. They could just pop it out there. I'm not a good liar. I've tried. It doesn't work. But we need to restrain, especially those who can be good at it. You know that you can do it. But does this help your day? Does this help your life? No. If you want to have a good day, if you want to have a good life, restrain your tongue. I know this is basic, but it's scripture. Your works affects your day and your life, not others, yours. Swerve out of the way of evil so that you can do good. The picture of that verse is that you're driving down the road, and then all of a sudden there's that, you know, 30-point buck that you just, oh, I just want to have that 30-point buck. But it's like, no, I'm on the path to do good, so I'm going to swerve out of the way. I'm intentionally move out of the way so that I'm not even near. Maybe I even do a U-turn because I want to make sure I'm doing what's right. I want to do what's good. And you see how active this isn't a passive thing that happens. Well, hopefully today I won't punch someone in the eye. That was my cousin. my aunt came up. Hey, I won't tell her name. She goes up to her, hey, how was your day? This is when she was in kindergarten, okay? She said, well, I didn't poke anyone in the eye, I didn't pull anyone's hair, I didn't punch anyone, so I had a good day. Because that was her M.O. It's like, okay, good. But the idea is just to swerve out of the way because you're on the path of doing what's good. And when the opportunity of evil is there, you don't even see how close you can get. You see it, you know, it's like, yeah, you move out of the way. Because we want to do what's good. And then pursue and maintain peace with those in your life. And really, this is probably the hardest one. That if you're not right with your parents, you need to pursue peace with them. But they said, but they did, but they don't. You pursue peace. Your wife, your husband, your boss, your government, fill in the blank, whoever it is, you are the one pursuing peace. Romans 12, 18, 14, 19, it's all talking about that we are to seek peace with those around us. You have a problem with someone in the church. You don't just sit back and talk bad about them. Oh, I'm just getting counseling. No. The counsel should be go seek peace. In your family, well, so-and-so did this. Seek peace. And ensue it. Keep it. Your works affects your days and your life. Good days are in God's hands. God's eyes and ears are open to the righteous. Those who keep their tongue and who pursue peace, God sees that and God hears those prayers. But then God also knows what the wicked do, for his face is on the ways of the wicked. Revelation 6, 9 through 11. It's an interesting text. It's actually during the tribulation, and I think it's the fifth seal that's open, and it says, in the blood of the martyrs who died for the cause of Christ, they shout out and they say, when, O Lord, will you avenge us? They're asking the question, when, Lord, when is justice going to happen? When is justice going to happen?
Who are these people?
People who died during the tribulation.
They did not accept the mark, correct?
Right. And these are people who died for the cause of Christ, who were keeping their tongues, if I could so say, who were pursuing peace, but yet were persecuted to the point of dying for Christ. And do you know what happens in Revelation 19? Justice. As harsh as that is, it's true. Where all those who are dead are raised and they brought forth before the great white throne of God. Again, I really like this Warren Wiersbe guy. He's pretty good. We can decide to endure life and make it a burden. Or we can escape life as though we were running away from a battle. Or enjoy life because we know God is in control. Some of us are having miserable days, miserable weeks, a bad day, a bad life, because we're not trusting that God's in control. Well, my good life has to have this and this and this. Who's in control of your life? Isn't God sovereign over your life? Isn't God sovereign over all these things over you? Doesn't God want what is best for you? Doesn't God want what is good for you? A good life is in the hands of God. Okay?
Was Warren Wiersbe, is he like in the Whitfield days?
No, Warren Wiersbe is like mid-1900s, I think. He passed away not too long ago.
Was he a preacher for what?
He's on my bookshelf.
Warren Wiersbe was a pastor of Moody's.
Oh, Moody.
Moody's Church.
In Chicago.
Moody, yeah. In Chicago. And a well-known speaker and author.
Yeah. And so this kind of concludes, this concludes the section of our honest living in this world on how we're supposed to live. But again, this is the theme, that we go through these things so that it may lead to the salvation of those around us. Because when the world sees our unity, what they see is Christ. So that should be our goal. Mr. Buchanan, could you close us in prayer, please?